You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Cyber Week deals at BJ's Wholesale Club are so great, we called in the North Pole's top IT expert to tell you about them.
Al the IT Elf here. This time of year, I'm asking everyone two things. Have you tried rebooting? And have you seen BJ's Cyber Week savings? Through December 7th, get a $20 digital coupon when you spend $200. Plus, through December 4th, get up to 40% off TVs, tech, and appliances. And like remembering your password, remember that these deals are only on BJ's.com or the BJ's app.
Visit BJ's.com/cyberweek for holiday savings.
Something I loved doing before I ever got into broadcasting was I was a lifeguard back in the day.
You were not?
I was.
Oh my gosh.
So basically a professional people watcher.
Amazing.
Obviously
amazing.
To make sure that everyone's safe. I mean, I'm doing it for the right reasons.
This is the Women's Prize for Fiction Bookshelfy podcast supported by Baileys. Join us in celebrating women's writing from around the world in the 30th anniversary year of the Women's Prize for Fiction, sharing our creativity, our voices, and our perspectives. I'm Vic Hope, and I am your host for Season 8 of Bookshelfy, the podcast that asks inspiring and brilliant women to share the five books by women that have shaped them and their lives. Join me and my incredible guests as we talk about the books you should be adding to your reading list.
Today, I'm joined by my lovely friend,
aww,
Shana Lurry.
Hi, Vic.
Hello. Shana is one of the biggest music tastemakers at Radio 1. She shares her love of music across three shows at the station, at Future Artists, Power Down Playlist and Chillest Show, as well as hosting a weekly show for Selector Radio, a global station celebrating British music. Named Music Week's Rising Star in 2021, Shana has judged some of music's biggest prizes, including the AIM Independent Music Awards, the Youth Music Awards, the Welsh Music Prize, the Brits, and the prestigious Mercury Music Prize, which she presented to this year's winner, Sam Fender, just a couple of weeks ago in my hometown in Newcastle. Shana previously presented the BBC Three series Paranormal, Rolling Stone UK's Future of Music, and is currently filming a documentary series about the Welsh artist Gwen John for BBC Cymru. She's also the host of The Voice Wales in her native Welsh language, which is returning soon for season two. And now we get to talk about books.
Yay!
Yeah, I don't think we've ever done that before.
No, we never have.
We've talked about many other things.
Many other things. One of my favourite things we've ever spoken about was at the Brits. This was, what, like 3 years ago now, Vic?
Yeah, I remember we were sitting next to each other. We were right at the front, dancing to Lizzo.
We really were. Yeah. Oh, God, it was Lizzo that year.
It was, yeah.
We had great seats.
Yeah.
Best seats in the house. But I remember us talking about pottery at the time.
Oh, my gosh.
It was like my that was like my hyperfixation at the time. I still love it.
Are you still potting?
Oh, I wish I was. It's a time.
Yeah.
Time. But I'm going to try and carve some out for 2026. That's my kind of goal going ahead.
Well, speaking of carving time out for you and the things that you love to do, because, you know, music is, it's your job, but it's also the best thing in the world. Where does reading sit amongst that? Is it the same sort of escape that you get from music?
Definitely. Yeah. For me, reading and music offer different levels of escapism, right? And different levels of feeling seen. I think the thing I love about reading is exactly the parallel with music. And I don't know if you feel this way, but when you do something so often and when it becomes your job, I dare say it too loudly, but this is idea of it becoming a bit of a chore. So sometimes music listening, especially on a Friday when all these albums drop at the same time, is like, oh, I can't be bothered today.
It's annoying they all come out at the same time. I get it, but it can make it feel quite like an inundation and you don't necessarily take the time to just enjoy it because it's a pleasure.
Definitely. And I think it was back in 2024, I made it a New Year's resolution to read more because it's something I loved doing so much growing up. And I realised, oh my God, I've been rereading the same beginning of a book on holiday for the last 10 years. So I said to myself, New Year's resolution, one book a month, just 12 a year. I felt it was manageable to juggle in between everything else.
That's a good goal, yeah.
And initially when I tell my friends who are big readers, I was 12 and they were like, okay, I'm doing 50. I'm like,
come on, there's no judgment in this community. That is not what we're about.
Thanks, Vic. So, and I did it. And I was so proud of myself. And admittedly, it was a bit stressful near the end of the year because I had like 4 books to read in December. Yeah. But I did it. And I'm so pleased I did because it's completely opened up my world. And it's helped with my job where it's even little things like vocab. Mm. I've got a notes up on my phone at any one time for a radio show where if I'm reading a book and there's a lovely word or a lovely phrase in there, I'm like, aha, that conjures such an image in my mind. I can do that on the radio too. You know, I can paint a picture with words using my voice. And so I'll put in that little phrase into my notes and think, right, okay, how do I dig back into that and use that on the radio show? And it's just, I think it's made me a better presenter by reading more.
You do have beautiful vocabulary, the way that you broadcast.
Oh, thanks.
It's very soothing and you describe things so perfectly. And that obviously will come from just exploring the scope of language, the way that it can evoke the feelings, the thoughts, the landscapes that, you know, also is the case with books.
Mm.
And you said that you feel seen by books and by music in the same way. So what kind of books do you gravitate towards? Is this fiction mainly?
Mainly fiction, yeah. I'm not a big biography person. I don't think I'm necessarily drawn to that as much. I don't know whether I just like escaping into that fantasy. I know growing up, I was a huge fiend for, I don't know, your Hunger Games is, and your Twilight, because I was like, oh
there's
my God.
There's a couple of dystopian novels on here.
Yeah,
on
surprise.
Yeah. I was like, okay, Sean.
But I love that. I love the mystery and the world building behind it. And the fact that the author is able to take us there. I think it's such an exciting and amazing skill that they can do to make something feel real. And so if I can ever use that in radio shows where... Let me try and find an example, actually, because I used one not too long ago from a book, and I can't remember for the life of me what it's called now. Orbital. Was it no?
Oh, Orbital. The Samantha Harvey.
Yeah. Read that. Oh my God, that is an absolute goldmine.
It's so potent, the language in that, because it's so short, isn't it?
Mm.
And succinct and almost elusive, but she gets something across that does feel cosmic.
Yes.
Like constantly every single word is loaded. The word economy of it is brilliant.
Oh,
which is what
God.
You want on the radio, because we're always told to get to the main bit fast.
Yeah. Find the funny faster.
Not necessarily always funny. I always feel like there's a lot of pressure when he says find the funny fast. I'm like, I'm not always gonna be funny.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not a comedian. We're trying our best.
But the word economy is important, and she does that so well in Orbital.
And using those words sparingly and doing it with such skill. Let me find that. There we go. Words is literally what it's called.
Excellent.
And there's a bunch in here that I'm like, I'm going to challenge myself to throw one of these in there during a link.
This is great. For those of you listening, Shan's holding up her phone now. She's got the notes open. And it's a note that's just called words, and it's full.
It's like a whole list. So one of them was mist curling around the back.
Great.
So I used that recently
on the radio.
Excellent. To describe more of kind of like a moody electronic song where you're in the forest,
yeah,
and you can almost feel the cold kind of weaving between your legs. There's little things like that where if I'm able to paint a picture with the way I'm speaking, that's what reading gives me as well.
It's perfect.
It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, and I can actually hear the kind of song that would be now.
Yeah.
It's very James Blakey.
So James Blake.
Yes. Well, let's talk about the books that you delve into and you get those little nuggets, that magic from. Your first Bookshelfie book is translated into English as The Blue Book of Nebo, but in Welsh it would be...
Llyfr Glas Nebo.
Llyfr Glas Nebo.
Nailed it.
Hey, by Manon Stephen Ross. I was practicing so much this morning, and it turns out I was doing it all wrong. This is a prize-winning Welsh post-apocalyptic novel that chronicles the story of a mother and her children surviving the end in rural northwest Wales. With no electricity or modern technology, they're forced to abandon their old lives and learn to live off the land. It's told through a dual narrative in a notebook, or the Blue Book of the title, that mother and son use as a shared diary. the novel explores the human capacity to adapt and find new strengths when faced with extreme circumstances. Can you remember when you first read this book? Roughly
yes.
What age you'd have been?
I was around 19. So I did all of my GCSEs through the medium of Welsh because it's my first language. Mm-hmm. And I remember at the time feeling like Welsh literature was not stiff necessarily, but everything was very academic leaning. And for whatever reason, I painted every Welsh language book with the same brush, which is so stupid in hindsight now as an adult looking back, because I'm like, well, if I were to think that every English language book was like Shakespearean in the way that it was written, then I would be disinterested in reading personally.
So this is just what you were learning at school,
yeah.
What you were studying.
Yeah, right. And I was like, I'm so ignorant to think that all Welsh language books are like this. And so I remember a friend of mine at the time telling me about Manon Steffan Ross, and I think she just won a literary prize at the time for this one singular book. And I thought, okay, fine, I'll give it a go. And it blew me out the water in the way that it's written. So there is an English translation that everyone can read, and I would highly encourage anyone to do so. But I think what was magic about this book in particular is it completely changed my perspective on what Welsh writing was like. And it felt like the way that it was written was probably the most colloquial I've ever seen to this day from a writer in Welsh. There's so many different shades to the Welsh language, you know, from obviously dialect like you'd have anywhere in the world. But even the difference between North and South Welsh is extremely different in the way the words that we use and the phrases that we use. I think like a great example, just in terms of picking up sound, is if I were to ask someone if they wanted a cup of tea upstairs, in my kind of North Walian Carnarvon Welsh, I would say, tisio panad fy negrisia. Whereas in South Walian, you'd probably say, ti moyn disgled lan star.
That's very different.
Completely different. So I think having read so many more South Walian leaning literature growing up, I just felt like, oh, this isn't written for me. It's not written for people that grew up where we did. And so for Manon to completely blow any stereotype I had out the water was so important in making me feel actually connected to language. And I think the significance of this book when it comes to language is so crucial, because it's about survival. It's a post-apocalyptic world. We don't know what's happened. It's a mother and son that have found themselves in this situation. And yet, so much of it is about the resilience and making a log of things, writing things down. That's what Llyfr Glas Nebo, the little blue book, is all about. It's their record of their lives. It's capturing things like the very mundane, you know, like pottering around the garden and looking for supplies. You know, it's the kind of the everydayness of it, which I love, that she captures so well in every book that I've read of hers. But through to the perseverance of language and having a log of it like this and showing how it's incorporated in everyone's daily lives. It's so important. It's such an important book.
There's something as well about the Welsh language, particularly in the way that Manon Steffan Ross writes. It's such a musical rhythm to the prose. Do you think there's something inherently musical about the Welsh language? I mean, I know that you guys turn out some incredible musicians, right? And you know, you work on the voice, the singers that have come from Wales. How does it lend itself so well to storytelling?
God, I don't know. The age-old question, isn't it? Because anytime someone says, oh, I love the Welsh accent because it's so sing-songy.
Yeah.
You know, there's
that lilt.
I love that. That's the highest compliment in the world, because I'm like, oh, great. Well, hopefully we're nice to listen to. I can
you
look
are,
out to
what
language.
Yeah. Why is this?
I don't know. But I think, I wonder whether so much of it is down to just this Celtic intuition, I suppose, to want to tell stories. You know, something amazing in Welsh literature is the Mabinogi. So they're kind of like old wives' tales that we're taught in school about, I don't know, they're semi-fictional stories. So there's giants in there, there's dragons in there, there's witches, there's magic, there's wizards. It's kind of like a bit King Arthur-y in the way that they're written. But it's almost, they're told, these fables are almost told as if they are reality. And so there's something within you that feels very connected to the land and the history of where everything's come from. So where the language is just woven into that, it's really cool.
You work on the voice in Welsh. It's the Welsh language version of the show. It's returning soon for a second season. How important is it that there are opportunities like this for Welsh language singers, musicians?
It's huge to have a global platform like The Voice. It's a brand recognised all around the world.
It is, yeah.
And it's done in languages all around the world. And so for Wales to have a piece of that pie, part of me is like, about time. We have got great singers here. And singing and performing is a massive part of Welsh language culture. There's a thing called the Eisteddfod, which is a Welsh celebration and festival that happens every single year up and down the country. And it's kind of like a gimme that you have to participate if you're a Welsh language person growing up. So whether it's the choir competition that you apply through school or if it's the painting competition. So for a llais, The Voice, to exist in Wales now, it's so cool because I think it also shows that Welsh could be accessible to anyone. Lots of the people who have applied and have been competed in last year's show, for example, lots of them aren't native Welsh speakers, but they're learning or they can perform songs that they know and love. So like a Chapel Roan's Good Luck Babe was sang Pob Luck Babe, you know, that
so
was the
thing.
So we'll
translate it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think it just makes it accessible. Yeah. And that's the main thing for me is that I hate this kind of idea of elitism around the language because we're so scared about losing it. It's like, no, we need to make sure that we use it no matter what it sounds like, you know, from like a linguistic perspective. So long as everyone understands each other, that's how language continues and thrives.
Yeah. I always think the more languages, the better. I'm such a fan of languages. I've studied at university French, Spanish and Portuguese and just love getting my lips around a new language. There's no better feeling.
Yeah.
And so if we can spread as far and wide, then yeah, let's do it.
Which language did you enjoy learning most?
Spanish. Yeah, because I like going to Spanish-speaking places.
Yeah.
It's just that. It's respect, actually. It's being able to speak to people and kind of immerse yourself in someone else's culture on their level.
Yes.
And it feels amazing.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Even if I'm at a restaurant or something. Yeah. I was in Paris a couple of weeks ago for work, which is so cool, even coming out of my mouth. But I was there for work. I'm thinking, right, here we go. Je voudrais. I'm going to go for it. You know, I was like, I'm going to give it my all. And even if it's met with a bit of like a, sorry, one more time.
No, but it's
I'm
okay.
Like, oh, I'm trying.
You tried.
Yeah.
And hey, you were in Newcastle the other day.
I was.
There's another language altogether. I've had so many like friends come up to visit me and be like, I don't understand what anyone's saying. And it's the best. Let's talk about your second book, Shelfie Book, now.
Yes.
Which is Notes on an Execution by Dania Kukafka. Notes on an Execution follows a haunting dual timeline, counting down the final 12 hours of serial killer Ansel Packer's life, while also exploring his past through the eyes of three women. In contrast to Ansel's negative influence, the novel emphasises the complex and enduring relationships between these women, turning the prominent serial killer narrative on its head. What made you select this book today?
Oh, this book is an absolute dream. And not in a twisted, weird way, because it's obviously about a horrendous serial killer. But it's giving us the perspective of women who have encountered this man and have survived through him. And this idea of how their interactions with this one person can have ripples throughout the entire community. It doesn't just affect the victims, but the victims' families, of course, all the way through to the police service who grew up around him. There's a log about the mother, for example. It's just an amazing, amazing book on women's voices. And I had to bring it specifically for this podcast because it just felt so right. And it's so masterfully done. It's really emotionally complex. I think you first land into the book and you're hearing the story from Ansel, the serial killer's perspective. And there's a strange charm about him. I think if we ever were to encounter someone that kind of horrible or someone who was that intrinsically linked with crime and the violent past, we'd like to think, oh yeah, I could spot them a mile off. Yeah, of course they are. Of course they're horrible. And it's like, well, actually, that's not the reality most of the time. And the more you learn about their behaviour and their experiences around this person, slowly but surely, the feelings you have towards different characters in this book mould and shape so amazingly. It's such a slow burn of a book. I wish I could read it from beginning to end as if I'd never read it before, because it's one of those books that you never want to end. I cried at the end. I love a book that makes me sad. So anything that leaves me in bits at the end, I adore.
I'm like, how did you manage to grab me by the scruff of the neck emotionally and pull me through that? I feel you. I feel exactly the same. And that complexity, that moral compass, this book is a book that explores morality, justice, empathy from multiple perspectives as well, because these are not a science. It feels like an antidote to our obsession with true crime in a way.
Yes.
As someone who's used to interviewing people and trying to get to understand them, get the best out of them, finding their human side, did this novel make you think differently about the stories we tell and who gets to tell them?
What an unbelievably amazing question. Like, whoa, I'm mind blown. Can you give it to me one more time?
Does it make you feel differently about the stories that we tell?
Yeah.
Who gets to tell them? Who owns a story?
Oh my God, definitely. And it's now all kind of dawning on me, because I read this book relatively recently. Mm-hmm. When did I finish it? I finished it about 2 months ago now.
Oh, okay, super recently.
So yeah, really, really fresh. And so I'm still kind of sitting with the book as well. And do you know what? I think it removes you from being the first person or the main character in my own life, for example. So if I'm really in my head about something with work, if I'm really stressed, this idea that, well, there's someone else, kind of, I'm not the main character in someone else's life, you know, but it's really interesting seeing how people can interact with one another in such interesting and intricate ways, and their relationships with one another are completely different and they change over time. I think that book reflects that so amazingly. And it's the kind of book that creeps up on you as well. I think it shows different people's psyches. You know, Ansel initially seems really calm, and he feels like he doesn't deserve to be on death row, and that there's a chance for escape here, and that he can manipulate someone into helping him
like
get out of this situation.
Does.
Like he always
yes,
did.
Like always
manipulator,
to.
You know? And I think it's really interesting also reading the perspective of this person about women, because there's a clear distaste and disrespect for women woven throughout the entire book. You can read it from start to finish, and he's almost in denial about this. But for me personally, there's so much obsession a lot of the time with what makes a serial killer. You know, there's so many documentaries out there like, ooh, what makes a person like that tick? You know, there's almost like this glamorization of celebrity.
We give them a lot of credit, actually.
Yeah, and it's like, well, hang on. What about all these other people that this individual's actions has affected, not just in the moment, but spreading far and wide, maybe to the point where that individual doesn't even know, also doesn't care about the impact that they've had on the other person.
And that ingrained disrespect for women is not just that one person in isolation. We live in a society where that is really facilitated, and so someone like that can thrive.
Yeah.
It's interesting what you say about taking yourself out of the picture. It's something I think is so important as a broadcaster. Like, it's not about us. If you're interviewing someone, it's about them. And one of my favourite words, it's from the Dictionary of Obscure Sorrows, it's sonder. And it's the realisation that every passerby is living a life as complex and as vivid as your own.
Yes.
And so I think that something that's reflected in this novel is that it's all going on for everyone. And it's something like, you're so right. You have to remind yourself of every moment of every day.
Yeah.
You're not the main character.
No, you're not. Something I loved doing before I ever got into broadcasting was I was a lifeguard back in the day.
You were not.
I was.
Oh my gosh.
So basically a professional people watcher.
Amazing.
Obviously
amazing.
To make sure that everyone's safe. I mean, I'm doing it for the right reasons. But I love the idea of sitting on those really high chairs, looking down on everyone. Yeah, everyone's safe. Okay, cool. And then watching, I don't know, like two older women who'd like gone swimming together and thinking, how's their day going so far?
Yeah.
How long have they known each other? What's the latest gossip? I can almost like professionally eavesdrop on these people's conversations, whereas there might be a father and daughter and he's taking her for a swim and things like that, where you can see the confidence blooming in the moment. And is she going to school later? Little things like that, where it was amazing to be able to observe people almost in their like own little bubbles,
yeah,
and watch how life goes by in that way.
Everyone's got a story.
Everyone's got a story.
She's a voyeur, ladies and gentlemen. But I also love that every single book will bring us back very subtly to the Mercury Prize and Sam Fenden. People watching. There we go.
Baileys is proudly supporting the Women's Prize for Fiction by helping showcase incredible writing by remarkable women, celebrating their accomplishments and getting more of their books into the hands of more people. Baileys is the perfect adult treat, whether shaken in a cocktail, over ice cream, or paired with your favourite book. Check out baileys.com for our favourite Baileys recipes.
Think about the last time you had a cancel subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores. Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
We move on now to your third bookshelfy book, which is I Who Have Never Known Men by Jacqueline Hartman, translated by Ross Schwartz. I Who Have Never Known Men was originally written in French, published in 1995, with the English translation from Ross Schwartz published in the UK in 1997 as Mistress of Silence, before then adopting the more popular US title, I Who Have Never Known Men. A profound and thrilling dystopian novel about one girl and 39 women imprisoned in an underground cage guarded by silent men. It explores sisterhood and survival and a contemporary commentary on gender and identity. You consider this book a work of genius.
Yes.
Tell us about it, why you chose it.
This is the one book that I have not stopped Googling since finishing it, because it is absolutely amazing. I also spoke on Radio 3 about this book on a Goodread, because they asked me, okay, what's the one book that you'd recommend in terms of the one thing that you think stands out above all the rest? This is the one book that's lingered with me since I read it about 3 years ago. It is an unbelievable. I don't even know where to start, because it covers so many different topics, from obviously my love of kind of fantasy growing up and the mystery and this idea of having an unnamed narrator and a relatively unreliable one, which I also really like.
Yeah.
When it comes to books like that. But you're constantly on this journey trying to figure out, right, how on earth did we get here? Why are we here? Why us? Because this idea that 39 women are all captive, they have no idea how they got there, why they're there, and suddenly an alarm goes off. I don't think this is a spoiler necessarily, but an alarm goes off, the guards vanish, and they escape, and then they're trying to figure out what is left of the world above ground. And it is such an amazing book on the constant search for meaning in life. This trying to make tangible meaning, how to find purpose in our own existence. I've had almost existential crises reading this book every time, because I'm thinking, okay, well, clearly intimacy is a really important thing, and emotional intimacy in particular with this book. You see how the narrator is trying to figure out what's happening in the world, what the world looked like before, in and amongst kind of talking to these other women, and they have relationships with each other and relying on each other so much, and even craving things like physical intimacy. Is it this thing about connection that makes us human? Is it helping others that makes us human? Like, there's so much about what is at the core of humanity when it comes to this book. That's why I think it's genius, because it's made me completely rethink about what gives me meaning in my life.
You said times that you read it, so you've read it more than once.
Yeah, I have to.
Oh my gosh,
it's great. I think it'll have to be a book I read every year.
Right. Yeah. So how many times have you returned to it so far?
I read it 3 years ago, so I've done it twice, so I'm due another.
Okay. No, but it is a book that's had this renaissance, actually, very, very recently, in the last year or so, thanks to Book Talk, and being recommended as well on Dua Lipa's podcast on Service 95. It sold 45,000 copies last year, 11 times more than the previous year.
Whoa.
So every time you read it, it's also selling more. It just grows. What do you think it is about this novel that made it such a hit with Gen Z readers?
See, I don't know, because it was also a recommendation I got from TikTok.
Mm.
I honestly really don't know. I think there's something stunning about the cover. I've got it somewhere here. I think there's something really curious about the way that it looks. I think it kind of looks like a classic initially.
Yeah.
But also this idea of like an isolated woman, and you don't really know anything about her. And maybe it is down to the dystopian element of it that really appeals to younger readers, because it is so otherworldly and is so post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely an appeal there. But I think it's just the writing speaks for itself, though. Yeah. I think the second you dive in, you're already in the narrator's world. You're trying to figure it out just as much as she is, and you're going along with the journey of her self-discovery and who she is. And I think at a time where we're trying to figure out who we are as teenagers,
yes,
I think that says a lot about people who feel like they need this book.
And you said there that it looks like a classic. It is. It has this sort of timeless quality. It's stripped of any noise, it's silent, stripped of names. In some ways, do you think that helps give it a universality and a timelessness?
Definitely, because even things like technology aren't really integrated into it, so it's almost this, you're ripping yourself out of our current reality and you're being plonked into this other one, and you have no idea how you got there, just as much as the narrator doesn't know how she's there. So there's a timelessness, I think, to this book. It's evergreen.
It's a dystopian novel. And onto another dystopian novel. It was your second. And
surprise!
Now we're onto your third, which is your fourth book today. And it's Migrations by Charlotte McConaghy.
Yeah.
Sean's just clasped her hand to her heart. She clutched her pearls. Franny Stone travels to Greenland to follow the last Arctic terns on their final migration to Antarctica. As she joins the crew of a fishing boat and journeys south, her troubled past, including a passionate love affair and a devastating crime, begins to unspool. A hybrid of nature writing and dystopian fiction, the story combines Franny's epic journey and an intimate look at her dark secrets as she seeks redemption. So this is, again, another sort of more recent read for you.
Mm-hmm.
What makes it so pertinent to you in your life right now?
I think it says a lot about the current existence of the climate crisis, if I'm honest, because we're tracking Franny's journey as she tries to track the final migration of the Arctic terns from Greenland to Antarctica. And unfortunately, it's probably quite a realistic worry that is closer to us than we think. And it's an amazing reflection, I think, of how a huge problem that faces all of us can be individualized, this one woman's experience, and how she feels so connected to nature and how she feels like an intense need to protect it and to feel comfort from these animals, you know, where the world is changing around them and there's nothing that they can do about it. And often we feel really helpless. There's times where I feel really helpless about the climate crisis when I'm like, what on earth can I do, you know, to help?
I'm so small.
Yeah, I'm so, yeah, a little old me, you know, like what can I, yeah, I shop secondhand where I can and, you know, I'm trying to reduce how much plastic I use and little things like that where sometimes it feels like an endless, scary beast, the climate crisis. And so I think this is a lovely book in that you feel the level of empathy that she has for nature and the helplessness that she feels. And that's actually quite a normal thing.
How did you feel when you finished it? Did you feel hopeful? Did you feel galvanized?
I felt relatively hopeful because I think there's an idea that she feels so connected to the land and the nature around it that nature will hopefully always find a way. Mm. But I read this entire book in one sitting, ironically, on one aeroplane.
Oh, if it's so often the case, isn't it? When you have that time to just like, plug in.
I know, and I was also like, oh no, I'm on a plane. I'm reading this thing. But I was actually flying over Greenland at the time.
No, you weren't.
So I was looking out the window every now and again, being like, oh my goodness me. It's like,
so serendipitous.
Yeah, so I felt so conflicted at the time because I was like, oh my God, this is a book about green.
It's the reminder you needed.
Yes, it was. And I was like, wow, I feel really guilty, but also I'm in awe because I literally got a snapshot now of the world below me and how precious the world is. Do you often feel reflective on planes anyway?
Of course. I think something about the altitude makes you very emotional anyway. There's been times I've been told to stop crying so loudly when I've been reading. I'm wailing.
Yeah, I was there like at the end of this book, I'm like, so I can barely breathe. And the man next to me was like, You're good.
Yeah, I'm fine. It's a really good book.
So, yeah, but I love this book. And I think she as a character is really interesting because she's not that likable.
Mm.
And I think that's really refreshing a lot of the time where she might make decisions that I wouldn't necessarily make or I'd find decisions that she makes sometimes a little bit annoying. But it's about understanding what a person like that would go through and what would lead them to go on this enormous voyage on the other side of the world and what took them there. And I think that's why I really like the snapshots of the past. They're almost like flashbacks, aren't they, to her life when she was meeting her husband, to her having a mysterious stint in prison. You know, she's a very mysterious person. She clearly lives life in the extremes because she's happy to put herself in such an extreme situation, like travelling from top of the earth all the way down to the bottom on a little rickety boat with some proper misfits on board. So it's such an adventure. It's an odyssey. I love this book. I can't wait to read it again.
Calling it an odyssey, yes. Well, and this is the thing about an unreliable, unlikable narrator who is complicated. And, you know, a lot of your choices, actually, that you brought today, they've got really interesting forms of narration because that's what we are like. That's how you feel seen. That's how you put yourself in those shoes. It's a book about movement. It's about loss and belonging, deeply human themes that we can all relate to. Did it make you think about what home means to you?
Yes. And I think maybe that's why there were moments when I didn't relate to this character.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of talk in the book about how she doesn't want to feel attached to one place in particular. She always wants to leave. She always is searching for the next thing. It's almost like she's on her very own migration, like these terns. And she doesn't like this idea of being bound and rooted. And I find that fascinating because I've definitely had moments in my life where I felt that way, where Wales and everything it encapsulates will always be a part of me. It's a huge part of how I also reflect myself in the world. You know, my Welshness, I wear it like a badge of honour.
Yeah.
I would, anytime someone's like, oh, where are you from? I'm like, I'm obviously from Wales.
No one's asking you where you're from,
should
all
we? The time.
No.
I get Geordie, I get Scouse, I get Polish, I get
really?
All sorts, and I'm like, come on, guys. But so to me, my Welshness is such an enormous part of how I lead my life and how I see the world.
Yeah.
And how I navigate through it. But I remember when I was like 17, I had this, I suppose, pull to leave. And part of me, I know this sounds, it might sound silly, but I didn't feel Welsh enough to stay in Wales. And I couldn't even tell you why. I think it's almost like a yearning to find others, And there's no this at all towards my upbringing. My home friends are the best people in the world. My family are incredible. They're still there as well. But I think it's there was something about movement and change that was really appealing. So to me, it was never I never crossed my mind that I would actually stay in Wales once I turned 18. It was like, right, okay, we fly, we find somewhere else now. We doing find home elsewhere. So home is a really interesting topic because I even remember moving to Leeds where I went to university, and one of the first things I did was to try and find Welsh people. And isn't that ironic?
You find your tribe, yeah.
Isn't that ironic? I was like, oh, I want to leave Wales and, you know, Welsh people, but I want to find Welsh people in this bit now. It was like one of my first missions. And I'm still really close friends with those Welsh people that I did thankfully find in Leeds. So it's almost like it's this idea of finding community wherever you are and finding that slice of home. And home can mean so much. I mean, even for this character, this idea that her other half felt like home a lot of the time, where she didn't feel a permanence towards a specific place. We can feel that too. I love this topic, by the way.
I agree. It's not always a place, is it? It's often a person. I remember meeting my husband and thinking, oh my gosh, I've found my home. Mm. But also it's finding your tribes in different places. Mm. They move around, they migrate, you migrate. Mm. And there's something about realizing as well that this beautiful natural world that we live in is our home as a whole. Mm. And yes, we feel so small, but we feel so embedded and rooted in it. There's comfort in that. I think remembering the beauty around us feels like home.
Yeah.
And actually, if we're going to bring it back to the Mercury Music Prize, for me, home is Newcastle, where it was held this year. And the winner, Sam Fender, is from there.
Was a local.
I can't believe we're at the fifth and final book already. Here we are. And it is Arrangements in Blue by Amy Key. Another beautiful cover. I'm just looking at it on the on the table in front of us.
It's gorgeous, isn't it? It's quite artsy.
Mm.
But it's cool, isn't it?
I really
like it a lot. I'm actually not sure where the painting's from. Oh, there we go. Blue Window from Nora Reza from 2007. But it's stunning, isn't it?
It's gorgeous. And the question at its heart is it possible that life without romantic love isn't so bad? Poet Amy Key's memoir chronicles her life as a single woman in her 40s. Inspired by Joni Mitchell's seminal album, Blue, the book uses the album's themes to explore different kinds of love and relationships outside of traditional romance. With profound intimacy, Key delves into the challenges and joys of building a fulfilling life for herself rather than living in a holding pattern for a partner. Now, you've said that this is a book that you always recommend.
Mm.
What is it about this memoir that makes you want to, like, press it into the hands of others?
Oh, it's the depiction of womanhood. Mm. It's all the messy things. It's all the pretty things. It's how we feel about ourselves all the way through from being teenagers and craving this idea of, oh, I really want a special someone. I want my first kiss. Da, 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 da. Like the kind of magic behind that and what romantic love looks like from what we've seen on telly and listened in music specifically for this book. All the way through to how life is really like as a woman. It's incredible. I want to recommend this to literally anyone because she's so funny. I think that is one of the funniest books I've read in ages. It's also the only non-fiction I brought in today. And being big music heads, I feel like music affects our lives a lot.
Yeah.
And for one person to take such an iconic album like Joni Mitchell's Blue and use that as a measuring stick for how intense love can feel and how worthwhile love can be just through music is such an astonishing way of navigating your life. Do you mind if I quote you a bit?
Please do. I love when someone gets the book out and does a little reading.
I've got loads of like little kind of notices,
yeah,
but there's
one of them.
but there's on page 4, it's right at the beginning, so no spoilers, it's fine. She writes, in early crushes and relationships, I test my feelings against the blues sentiments as though the album provided an ultimate scale of intensity that would reveal whether the love had substance. Was it a love so strong I couldn't numb it out of myself with wine? Did it have the endurance of the Northern Star? Could it keep away my blues? Would it anchor me where I stood or let me sail away? Looking back now, I think I tricked myself into believing almost all of my romantic attachments measured up against the blues scale. Accepted love would bring me pain, so much so that joyful love became not an expectation, but an occasional gift. Love meant being prepared to bleed. I was ready to commit to it. What? Starting a book like that? Are you joking? Are you taking the mick?
And you're in.
My God. It's just amazing.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you can listen to the same song having had different things happen to you, having gone through a breakup, being in the throes of passion, and it will sound completely different. Mm-hmm. And she's really evoking that throughout this book.
Yeah, every chapter is based on a different track within the album and how she takes different lyrics for herself. And she even says at different points in her life, she reads it differently, where she's like, oh, I actually misunderstood this lyric when I first heard it.
Oh, I get it now.
Yeah. Penny dropped. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember when you first discovered this book? What was going on for you when you read it? Because that will be quite instrumental in how you will have perceived it.
This is the newest book I've read. Okay. I literally finished it this weekend.
Right.
But I saw that Self-Esteem, Rebecca Lucy Taylor, recommended this.
Okay, if she recommends anything, I'm reading
it. I know.
It.
Well, yeah. That was the thing. I was like, right, what's she reading? And I think she just made a social media video saying, oh, I loved Amy Key. Yeah. This is a great book. And if you're a music lover, read it. And I was like, okay, well, don't have to ask me twice. Of course I will. And it's incredible, isn't it? It's so great. And so much of it speaks of womanhood and identity and how much emphasis we end up putting on romantic love to carve out meaning in our own lives and even navigating the rubbish things in life that actually are quite difficult to do if you're single, like the rental market, you know, or living independently. If you want children, it's really, really challenging. And it's a really generous book in the way that she talks about her own life. She definitely reveals things about her inner turmoils that, I mean, I would never want to speak out loud. So the fact that she's put it down on paper and it just exists forever, it's really brave of her.
And now you have the words to articulate that if you ever need to.
Yeah.
You can put them in your notes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And turn to them when you know you need to vocalize feelings that are just so profound. It resists this idea that romantic love is the only type of love that can give us value or the only kind worth writing about. Like we said before, so many albums are about love, so many books are about love, all the films are about love. Did you feel like you really connected with that idea when you were reading it?
100%. And I felt like she was talking to me. Yeah. I think the way it's written is so masterful. I know she's a poet by day, so it doesn't surprise me at all that she's able to write a book so beautifully. And sometimes, honestly, I felt like I was reading about myself. And that's amazing. That's the first time it's ever happened to me in a book. And maybe I need to read more nonfiction because I think it really resonated with me in that way. And it talks a lot about female friendships and how pertinent and how much we should prioritize them in our lives too, and how you see your friends navigating through their love lives and how that relationship changes. It's just an amazing book. I could talk about this book all day. It's one of those books that you could flick to any page, read a paragraph and be like, yep,
I'll take that.
Yeah.
I love when a book gives you great advice for your friends. So I put that in my arsenal. I've got that if I ever need to just give a bit of support to one of my mates. And actually often the mate is you. You need to give it to yourself.
Yes.
But it's so easier to give advice to others than to yourself.
Yeah.
And you mentioned there Amy Key, beautiful poet. And there is this sense of rhythm and musicality, melody running through her words. Did you hear the music? I mean, obviously it's based on an album. Did you hear the songs?
So this sounds naff. I deliberately listened to the songs while reading the book.
Perfect.
So anytime there was a chapter, I'd be like, right, she's talking about blue here. Let me whack that on. And then I would have that on loop while I was reading the chapter.
That's not naff at all. I think that's probably very much her intention.
I hope so.
I think so.
It felt right to do. She doesn't tell you to do that, but I was like, it feels like I'm giving respect to the book.
But she will have been listening while she was writing as well.
I would have thought so.
So, you're putting yourself in that place.
Sure. I'll take that.
Well, for anyone who hasn't read it, I think that's a great exercise. Give it a go.
Yeah.
Joni Mitchell's Blue while reading Arrangements in Blue.
And it is one of the most amazing albums of all time.
Well, there we go.
One of the best songwriters of all time. So you can't go far wrong. You're going to have a great experience reading this book.
A beautiful experience. You've had five of them, really, in the five books you brought today. So I am going to have to ask you, Sian, to pick a favourite.
Oh, no, Vic. I knew it was coming as well.
It has to be done. I have to ask.
Oh, my God. I think in terms of timelessness and longevity and... Oh, God, this is horrible, actually. Timelessness and longevity, it has to be I, Who Have Never Known Men. I think it has to be.
I think that was the biggest reaction. When I read out the title of it, you were like, ah! I feel
like melting into the chair. Oh, my God,
I love this book.
Yeah, I think it has to be that, just because I've never read anything like it. And I will never not want to stop reading it. And I just wish I could give it a fresh pair of eyes every single year. I've dedicated now. I've said it on record. I need to read it every year, so it's happening.
You're doing it. And also, you've just said on the podcast that you'd like to give it a fresh pair of eyes. I mean, we have all these listeners who may or may not have read it, so there's a load of eyes.
Yes.
who can really enjoy it. Thank you so much. It's been so lovely to have you on the podcast.
Oh, my God. Thanks for having me.
Just chatting about books. For the first time. We should do this more often.
Can we please?
Yes.
Come round to mine for a cuppa.
I will. Thank you so much, Sian.
Thanks, Vic.
I'm Vic Hope, and you've been listening to the Women's Prize for Fiction Bookshelfy podcast, brought to you by Bailey's and produced by Birdline Media. Thank you for joining me for this episode. You'll find all the books discussed in our show notes. If you've enjoyed it, please leave us a rating or review to help other readers discover even more brilliant books by women. See you next time.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.